When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
ESPN's The Far Post podcast. The A-League women was the hottest place on earth this weekend in every sense of the word. It was just burning red fire. It was absolutely incredible, which means we have so much to talk about this week and we absolutely can't wait to get stuck into it. Before we do though, we want to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands we're recording on today, the Wurundjeri and Gadigal people, and pay our respects to their elders past and present. For this red hot episode, you've got me, Marissa Lordanik, Sam Lewis, Anna Harrington, and Angela Christian Wilkes. So my besties, let's begin this episode as we always do with some you love to see it. Angela, kick us off with a you love to see it.
This week, I love to see Alyssa Winham absolutely kill it in the distance derby against Perth. She absolutely made her mark on this game for the Knicks. But in particular, I wanted to give a shout out to the through ball that she did for Robertson's goal. I think it was the Knicks' second goal to put them up 2-1. Winham actually opened the account for the Knicks as well, but this through ball was just delicious. It was just like she thundered forward, she got it with the outside of her foot with this like sort of just cheeky little chip to thread Perth's defenders and get Robertson in behind, and then she scored. It was one of those moments. I was watching the game, I was like, oh, and whenever I do that, I'm like, that's your love to see it candidate when I make that noise. And I also love to see after the game, it was a big win for the Knicks after they lost 5-3 last week to Victory, and Alyssa Winham, she's got a lot of big feelings. She's just having a bit of a sob, happy sob after the game. And I'm like, I identify. And yeah, good for you. Like sometimes you just get completely overwhelmed, and it obviously meant a lot to her. And she, I think, was one of the best on ground for the Knicks. So yeah, you love to see it.
Do you love to see it siren from Angela and Alyssa Winham? We absolutely love to see both of them. Sam, what did you love to see this weekend?
I love to see two things in particular from Sydney FC's 3-1 win over Western United. Not only was I there at the ground to help with the Pride celebrations, which we'll talk a little bit about later, but I was also there to see the debut A-League women goal from Abby Lemon, who is a player who has really been thrust into a position this season, which I don't really know if she was ready for, but God bless her. She has worked and worked and worked and finally got her opening goal in their win. It was a really important goal as well. It was a pretty sort of tight tussle between those two teams for the opening sort of 10 to 15 minutes. And then, Lemon was able to open the scoring for Sydney. Western came back and equalized a little bit later on the second half, but then my other, you love to see it, of course, is Courtney Vine coming in, swinging, scoring two goals, her first goal since I think the start of February, a brace, and right in the crosshairs of Tony Gustafson, who was in the stands to watch her do it. So Abby Lemon, Courtney Vine scoring goals, Sydney FC beating top of the ladder Western United, me being there, oh, love to see all of it.
There's a sweet and sour or spicy sour joke in there somewhere with Courtney Vine and Abby Lemon, but I am not smart enough to come up with it, so I'm going to leave it. Harrow, what did you love to see from this weekend?
Well, maybe Tony Gustafson should have been in Adelaide instead of Sydney this weekend, or maybe he did a little road trip and went everywhere. You just don't know. Because my love to see it was Emily Gilnick putting her name up in lights yet again for Matilda's selection in my view, at least, with a really well-taken hat-trick against Adelaide United. The first goal was really lovely header from a Paige Joyce corner, and Zoyce has responded brilliantly to sort of being dropped earlier in the season, been really good those last two games. But I digress. Great header from Gilnick first up. Second one, was she offside? Definitely. Wasn't it still a really lovely finish? Fantastic curling finish, yes. But I particularly enjoyed the third goal. And it was this wonderful through ball from Alex Chidiak that took it out about four defenders, I reckon, to find Leah Privatelli out on the right. She was in acres of space and did exactly what you want your winger to do. Burst forward, look for the cutback or squaring ball, found Emily Gilnick, who tapped it home. Hat-trick, she's now got, I think it's six goals in her last four games. And the one game where she didn't score, the Wellington game, she got two assists. So she's doing it all at the moment. Emily Gilnick, a player in form, off the back of a really awful, awful injury run, showing everyone what she can do. You love to see it.
We absolutely do love to see it. And both Sam's and Harrow's, you love to see it, really lead us into this like next discussion very, very nicely. Because basically, when I asked you all for questions on social media about what you wanted us to talk about, literally almost every single one of you was like, M. Gilnick, Matildas, Gilnick for Tillies, Gilnick to Paris. But also Michelle Heyman keeps scoring. Kaya Simon keeps scoring. All of these players keep scoring. Courtney Vine literally bagged herself a brace. Tony Gustafsson's brain must be like whirring, like on overload, trying to fit all of these in-form players into his Matildas squad, into the conversation. So we need to talk about it. How are we feeling? Like, we know we've only got 18 players for the Olympic squad. What are we doing with all of these players coming into form? How are we moving around the magnets?
You call them up. Like, if Emily Gilnick's playing really well, the Michelle Heyman and Caitlin Torpy are prime examples. If players are in form, call them up. Like, you're never going to go wrong picking players who are in form at Clubland. It's like one of those pretty simple equations, I reckon, in football. Yeah, you can take gambles and risks and those sorts of things. I think Kaya Simon needs to do it for a bit longer. Just, she's scored a couple of goals, still building up game time. I think we've all seen the, you know, we all got led on a bit with the World Cup. And I think she probably needs to, just for her own confidence in her body and her form, and just for other players that have been informed for a lot longer, probably deserve that run first. But this is all a good thing to have. If you're going to lose someone like Sam Kerr, which is, let's be honest, was the worst case scenario, right? You want to have great options available, inform options available. And Michelle Heyman earned her Matildas call up, as did early in the season, Holly McNamara in great form. Had Vesna Vilivojevic been eligible for Australia, she probably would have been called up too, right? But Emily Gilnick is just in sensational form. She's playing, we talked about a couple of weeks ago. Victor had been really patient. I did think the Olympic qualifiers would have come a little bit too early, and I think they've been vindicated with that call. But she is just making like an irrepressible case for selection right now. She's doing it all. She's winning the ball out wide. She's winning it centrally. She's scoring headers. She's scoring bangers. She's getting in the right place for tap-ins. She's a player that, although, say, Aston Villa didn't work for her and she's had a bit of a rough run with injury, you can see from being in certain training environments and having to step up as a striker, it's really suited her. And we know she had that good run in Sweden for a bit there too as a striker. She just looks like a player that's in form and should be called up. And yeah, I know that you can only pick 18 players for Paris, but Paris is still like selection for that is probably, what, 4 months away, right? That's actually quite a lot of time. So you should be bringing through players who deserve it. You're not just, you know, Hail Marying caps out of nowhere, but players that have got proven form, yeah, you bring them into the environment because that keeps everyone else sharper, right? If they're up to the standard, you know that you're going to get the training standards from players like an Emily Gilnick in particular, who's been there, done that, much like a Michelle Heyman. You're not going to lose anything. It makes everyone sharper. It keeps your other strikers on their toes. It keeps your Amy Sayers hungry. Like, you want to see that. So, yeah, I reckon, especially if she keeps it up, going at incredible scoring rate at the moment, I don't see why you wouldn't call her up. Good problem to have.
Yeah, it's a great problem to have. I kind of, like, almost weirdly envy Tony Gustafsson being able to, like, fly around the swan around the country and just, like, watch all of these ripping players having a really good time and trying to impress him. Like, what a cool thing to do. And I think now that this is happening, it's really exciting for what the last three rounds of this season looks like, because there are a number of players who are now reaching this kind of form. They're really confident. They know that there's an international window coming their way. This competition or the regular season ends at the end of March, and they've got just a couple of games in order to really make their case. It's great. I'm excited not just for the players, but I'm excited for the Matildas, because like this is the whole point, right? Like this is how national team selection should go. It should be a battle of the fittest. It should be the all of these players pushing themselves individually at club level, which is where they do the vast majority of their development, having the incentive of being called up to national team camps and getting paid based on that structure, and continuing to improve. Because by continuing to improve, it forces all the other players that you're competing against for these spots to improve. And the consequence of that is that the team improves. So like with this sort of like healthy competitive tension, that is so great for pretty much every like little cog in this bigger Matildas machine going forward. And we do only have a couple of months until the Paris Olympics. There's only a couple of windows in which to call up these players and to get them to gel. So like, I'm thrilled that this is happening. And it's so exciting just watching these games and seeing these players who don't just have one eye on how their club goes in terms of championships, in terms of finals contentions, in terms of goal scoring records, whatever, but also having one eye on this bigger carrot and really pushing themselves towards that. So I'm really hoping that an Emily Gilnick gets a call up. I think having someone like that who can offer an alternative to a Michelle Heyman, like this is how fast this conversation is happening, right? Like originally we were like, Michelle Heyman is coming in to be a Sam Kerr replacement. And now I've got, well, we've got an Emily Gilnick who can come and be a Michelle Heyman replacement. Like that's great. That's depth. That's like, that's nuance and complexity and texture to a team, which is amazing. So I'm really keen. I hope that the players continue to kill it, and I just hope, touching all the pieces of wood that I can reach, that none of them get injured.
I guess the other thing, just while you guys were talking about that, what comes to mind is like kind of the next move for a Gilnick or a Vine in this context of like you wouldn't want to see, say for example, if Gilnick gets called into camp for the April window where we play Mexico. The A-League women's season is going to have finished shortly after that, and you wouldn't want to lose momentum. Like you want to see her continue to carry this. So it'll be interesting to see, where she goes. And also Vine, I think Vine, there's been quite a few question marks, maybe the past two seasons as to what her kind of, football club career is going to look like after the A-League women's season wraps up. And I don't know, I feel like it's kind of we're at the point where an overseas move is surely inevitable, but I think I've thought that before and it hasn't really happened. It'll be interesting. And yeah, like for Vine, her she took herself out of the last camp for personal reasons, and so it's like, it's not that she wasn't even out of the conversation, she's still very much in the conversation, but I think for us, because she faded that little bit, it was like, oh, she's got to pick up a bit, strap and go, and she's done that. So yeah, it's very exciting, and it's always nice just to see, lots of like new faces in the Matildas as well. Emily Gilnick is not a new face. I realized that as soon as I said that. I'm like, she is very much an established face, but I really like when she was in form, I really loved watching her play, so I really hope she does get a call up.
I think it's so funny as well that the last time we were speaking this positively about like a healthy Emily Gilnick, it was her last stint with Victory. So just something about like Melbourne and Jeff Hopkins seems to really agree with her, which obviously Vuk fans love to see. And if she can continue it, hopefully Tilly's fans will love to see. I think you raise a really excellent point though, because speaking of just like the timing of the season, we know that likely Gilnick, Vine will be playing finals, so they'll still have a little bit of extra football in them. And Michelle Heyman is not getting any extra football after this month ends, because Canberra are in all sorts on and off the field, which we'll probably need to talk about a little bit later. But it's a really good headache for Tony to have. And I think, a lot of the questions we got were about, so the Olympic squad and Harrow. I liked that you said we've still got like three windows before we even think about the Olympics. So if we're looking just at April, then yeah, I can't see a world where M. Gilnick is not called up for that April squad. So we will obviously watch and wait and see, because it's going to be lots and lots of fun. As we said, though, Gilnick, that was her hat trick was in the 4-1 victory over Adelaide in the Pride Cup, which was just another really big win for Victory. I think it's 13 goals in 3 games now. Like, they are on one in the best sense of that phrase. But I think the game we actually really need to talk about from this round is Sydney 3, Western United 1, because we had flagged it last week. We were like, "Ooh, mama, this is going to be fun. This is going to be exciting." Did it live up to the kind of hype or the hopes that we had for it last week?
I mean, I think it did. Yeah. I think it was a pretty tight game. Though I must say I was a little bit disappointed with Western. I thought that they probably should have really brought it to Sydney a bit more. I started to wonder what was happening when Chloe Legazzo wasn't in the starting lineup. I wasn't really sure what was going on there, whether there was some kind of injury, whether there was like a tactical thing, whether, you know, whatever. And I think they really missed her in that sort of opening, yeah, particularly in that opening half where you'd really want to sort of put your stamp on a game and control it. They really missed her sort of attacking momentum. They missed her creativity. They missed her breaking through lines. Hannah Keane was having to do a lot of work by herself, and I think it's a real credit to Charlotte McLean and to Jordan Thompson, because I think they were able to clean her up really, really well. It's just Sydney FC have just kind of like, we sort of talked about this in the last episode as well, they've kind of rediscovered themselves a little bit more now, which is great. Death Star, baby, this is we're coming. It's really comforting as a Sydney FC fan, I think, to watch a performance like this. They were largely in control. They didn't really have very many moments of absolute chaos like they did towards the back end of the season, and they didn't really allow Western to exploit them in the ways that they can be exploited. I think they've learned about that about themselves over the last couple of rounds, and have managed to find ways to lock teams out, which is great. That's how they've found themselves, you know, in the top four, and now they're within one win away from being top of the ladder, effectively, which is that catch-up game against Canberra United. So, yeah, it's a real credit to the staff, to the players for being able to really like grind through this season, I feel. And this was a game where I think the results of that grinding kind of gave them that confidence to be able to go out against a team like this and really play. I think it was great. I'm still concerned about Princess Abini. I don't know what's going on. She had a couple of moments there where, you know, Princess Beanie from 2 seasons ago would have absolutely just like leathered the ball into the net, but she just second guesses herself too many times. She tries to play the pass or tries to do another kind of thing without really trusting herself. But it was a bit of a relief that she was flanked on either side by Abby Lemon and Courtney Vine, who were pretty lethal and provided some really good attacking options. So, and another player who I think had a really great game was Taylor Ray. She's kind of skated under the radar a little bit since she's come back from her injury, but I think she really controlled things in midfield and she works so well with Mackenzie Hawksby. So yeah, I think it was great. It was a really good game. Beyond what was on the field, the atmosphere at the ground was also awesome. It was at Leichhardt Oval, which for any folks who've been there, you know that it's got like one side of it is a hill. It was absolutely packed with people who came along for the Pride celebrations. The whole grandstand was full. It was just it was really great weather as well. Like, everyone was super comfy. Everyone was having a great time. And to be able to watch Courtney Vine score both of those goals in real life, I think made the absolute dreams of the thousands of little girls who were there. So, yeah, it was a really cool time.
Yeah, no, the Pride celebrations looked excellent. And across the entire league, we saw that there were some subtle touches, some much bigger touches. So it's good. My main thing, and this is probably real bare minimum stuff, is that we actually got another round of Pride, because we know that's not always the case in some sporting leagues where they do one Pride thing and then the very next season it gets cancelled. So at least we are clearing the bare minimum kind of bar here. In terms of other results this round, we had Wellington getting a much-needed win over Perth. Perth are winless in, like, 9, I think it is. It's not good out west. It is, in fact, real bad out west. We had Canberra and Western Sydney playing out a 1-1 draw. A 97th-minute equaliser is how we saw the points shared there. And they will play again midweek because Canberra have the most ridiculous schedule coming up in March. The Mariners continue to just quietly coast up the ladder. They scored a 2-0 win over Brisbane. And then we had Melbourne City play Newcastle in ridiculous conditions. They got a 2-0 win in the end, but it was an important win for City. They really needed to grab the 3 points. So, Harrow, what'd you make of this one?
This is the best I've seen City play in ages. And, like, that's an extra compliment given how cooked literally the conditions were. Bizarre energies when we all thought Kira Myers, the 16-year-old, had scored her first goal, and then it got chalked off for offside, but no one sort of knew about it till like half time. I guess, you know, the perils of not having the commentator at the ground, and that's not commentator's fault. It's yeah, it was a bit of an odd one because it looked like City had taken the lead. So you're watching it like, oh, City are in control of this game. And they actually weren't yet. but after that, they definitely came out of halftime the stronger. Thank God the game was pushed back a bit because you got to see a bit more run and flair. And it was quite funny, actually. It was one of the best games I've seen from Hannah Wilkinson in a long time. Her build-up for the goal that got chalked off was really wonderful. And just a couple of great bits of striker positioning and finishing for the two goals. It was pretty funny. Rita was saying off air, carbon copy of each other, the goals. The first one, a Leah Davidson long ball down the right wing, didn't get cleared properly and it spills to Briley Henry, who runs and squares it for Wilkinson to score. And the second one is like 6 minutes later. I don't know how Newcastle fell for this one again. Davidson completes the through ball this time, goes straight to Henry, who this time cuts it back for Wilkinson and she slides in and scores. Best I've seen Briley Henry play in ages. She's had a tough run with form and fitness with some injuries, but played really well out wide. And City do seem to play well when they keep it simple like that, but they use their wingers and they make the most of having a real target woman up front in Hannah Wilkinson. Sometimes we know they love to possess the ball, but especially in those conditions, sometimes it is doing things simply that can work. I think they're a better team when Davidson's in there. I think she's just a really robust midfielder and just gives them some real structure and punch around the ball. The best they've probably played. Newcastle probably should have scored at some point. Bolden hit the bar in the first half, but it's such an important win for City. They did look like they were in free fall. They couldn't win. They were conceding sloppy goals and struggling to score, which isn't like them at all. And yeah, sometimes you just need a win that can just snap that run and just make things all feel a little bit better and get everyone's confidence up again. Boy, do they need it, because it's crunch time now. Put them back into second, albeit I know Sydney FC have that game in hand. But at the top, it's getting so close now, especially after Victory 1. And City and Victory, of course, play at the home of the Matildas this Sunday. So it just gets more and more high stakes, right? It was pleasing. I don't think it was necessarily perfect from City, but I think both teams deserve credit for the way they handled the conditions. Newcastle will probably look at it as maybe a bit of a missed opportunity, because I think they would have gone down to Casey thinking that they could probably pinch something given the respective form lines of the two teams. But full credit to City. I think they deserve that win.
What was the situation with the heat? Because we were following on Twitter. We were sort of watching the broadcast. It kept getting pushed back and back. Then there was like a question about why is this not being rescheduled to the night time? And then there was like a whole other team that was apparently around, meant to be playing a game. Can someone please explain this for the listeners?
Well, originally the game was scheduled for, I think, like 4 p.m. And then a couple of days out when they rescheduled all those games, like the Adelaide one, it got pushed back to 5 p.m. And then friend of the pod, Joey Lynch, was there at Casey Fields for it all. City were very, very adamant that they wanted the game either rescheduled or pushed back to at least 6:30 p.m. Newcastle wanted to get out there and play, which, you know, are good for you, but I would not be wanting to get out in that heat at Casey Fields, which I might add, for those who don't know, it's super exposed. I know it's a beautiful youth facility that they've set up, Melbourne City over there, but if the home team is saying probably shouldn't play yet, I'd probably be inclined to go with that. Yeah, and it just got pushed back, and then it got pushed back again. And eventually, yeah, it was a 6 p.m. kickoff with two drinks breaks per half. I think just with original planning, they were going to have a City men's Victorian Premier League one game or something on afterwards. I'm not too sure what happened with that in the end. But, yeah, I think had everyone had their time again, the game probably wouldn't have taken place during the day at all. I think maybe the lighting situation at Casey isn't yet up to scratch broadcast-wise to have it as a full-blown night game. But that's the impression I get. So yes, hence why it was a dusky sort of affair. That's where it landed. Basically really hot in Melbourne. And the game wasn't postponed. So yeah, I don't know how anyone was going to play, especially if they'd done it at the scheduled time, because like walking outside was like hot enough, and it's just Monday today, and it's been 3, 35 plus degree days in a row, and they've not been fun. So yeah, in short, it's a band-aid solution, right, to something that shouldn't really happen. They had the forecast a long time in advance to be able to change this game around. Sorry, this has turned into a bit of a boot. But, like, you know, these temperatures were forecast for at least a good few days, right? Like, this was never going to be the conditions to play that game. And at least some common sense came in that it got pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. But, like, should it have really been played at all? And I will emphasise, Newcastle clearly were very keen to play. I'm not sure how much that factored into things as well. But yes, maybe it shouldn't.
If you've got two drinks breaks in a single half of football, that's probably a good indication that you shouldn't be playing at all.
I would agree with you, Sam. But here we are. It does feel like we have this conversation at least once a season. Me and the wet bulb reading system don't get along. We don't agree. I just look at it and go, it's 37 degrees out there. It can't be good to play. But anyway, it's, yeah.
Yeah, maybe also, like, we don't... the person making the decision do a lap and then be like, so how'd you feel?
And then do a couple sprints, like do a couple of fartlek style lap, Angela.
Yeah.
You got to sprint down the long touch line. And then you can have a little jog as a treat. And if you can do that a few times, then it's good to play.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
You're fine.
Considering, yeah, if you don't faint, you're fine. Considering the, we've had reports in another sport, I think it was rugby league recently, where two players collapsed and I think one even died during hot weather training in New South Wales. Like these kinds of things really need to be considered a little bit more thoroughly. Like it's pretty concerning. I know that we don't know the reasons why it did go ahead when it did. If the issue was the lighting situation at Casey Fields, that certainly needs explaining, because this is a brand new facility and it was meant to be built for the A-League women's team, which was going to be broadcast. They always knew that this was going to happen. How did you not originally have the lights and the facility set up for that purpose? That's a little bit bizarre if that is the situation or that was the reasoning why it went ahead. And another reason potentially why it went ahead is because the Newcastle Jets probably couldn't afford to stay in Melbourne for an extra however many days it would take for them to figure out an alternative, which in itself is another problem. Like, you really can't afford to keep your team there for an extra day or two just in these circumstances. Yeah, I get so tired of talking about this because we've talked about it literally every season and the weather is only going to get worse. So hopefully, yeah, this is the last time that this happens, at least this season.
And once again, Sam, don't even have to necessarily think about the Jets staying another day if the forecasters just looked at that bit earlier.
That's right.
But yeah, it's pretty rough. And at least the right decision was made with the Adelaide victory game, and that was pushed back a day because clearly that game was never going to be right to proceed as planned. Although it did, I know I recognised that the Pride doubleheader was something people wanted. It was better for everyone that game didn't happen.
No, the Pride doubleheader is a good way to talk about quickly one of the games. We spoke obviously about Adelaide and Victory in the sense of Emily Gilnick, but yes, she was the show. There was a whole game that happened as well. So we'll talk a little bit about that game, Harrow.
It was very much the Emily Gilnick show. There wasn't too much else to it. Isabel Hodgson scored a lovely goal on the spin. Kayla Morrison finished off. It's quite interesting, actually. Adelaide finished with more shots than Victory. I think if you were just looking at it from like a status perspective, you'd be like, this looked like an even game. But Victory just stood up where it mattered. I don't think we necessarily learned too much from this game. Like, we knew Adelaide were kind of struggling. They were pretty well up for it. But Victory have scored 13 goals in three games. They are just a juggernaut at the moment. And I know I've said this with this caveat last week and I think the week before. We need to see them do it against a really good team. And that's why I'm excited to see them play against Melbourne City this week, because I think that's going to be a genuine litmus test for both teams. Like, City, have you actually turned the corner again? Victory, are you actually really good? Or are you, you know, you don't want to be, they've been a strong run of form, but you don't want to be looked at as flat track bullies, right? You want to, you're not expected to beat Melbourne City 4-0, but I think they should feel confident that they can beat City, especially when you look at the way BD Goad and Alex Chidiak have found form as a combination. When BD Goad's come back into that lineup and just looks magical, and Chidiak playing on the right side of midfield has really worked. They got a really interesting decision to make. Elise Keller-Knight missed the last couple of games, I think through concussion, and we know she's been a mainstay, but their midfield has functioned really well these past few games without her. Paige Joyce, as I mentioned off the top, has really impressed. She got dropped earlier in the season, so had to fight her way back in, and has played really well the past two games. Two assists from her corners on the weekend. It looks, Rachel Lowe's had the assist for the offside goal, as you know, most weekends has been pitching in with goals as well. So it seems like they have found a formula that works, and it's going to be really fascinating to see if you stick or twist in this regard, especially with Kellen Knight, who's obviously such a leader and mainstay there. But when your midfield is functioning really well, maybe that role has to be coming off the bench.
As we said, that was the Pride Cup game. Very quickly, let's talk about the Pride round. Like I said, bare minimum stuff that we got another one. That's good. Let's keep doing that. Let's continue that. We wanted to do like a Pride kit rankings kind of thing. Unfortunately, that's not a very extensive kit ranking. Sam's pointing to it behind her. She has the Adelaide United goalkeeper kit, which is far and away the best piece of Pride merchandise that has maybe ever been produced in this country. Like, it slaps. It is so good. And that's it. That's with all due respect to Adelaide's main kit, to Melbourne Victory's warm-up kit, the Adelaide United kit is the best kit. It's so good.
It's amazing. And I have to give a huge shout out to a friend of the pod, Kirsty McKenzie, who was able to nab me one of these amazing goalkeeper kits. Not only is it stunning, but it was also modelled by the fantastic goalkeeper Grace, who came out as non-binary last week as well. So it's a really iconic kit in that sense. And I'm really, really grateful to Kirsty for getting me one. So thank you so much. And it's kind of a nice segue, Marissa, like talking about the kind of lack of effort that a lot of clubs put into their Pride kits this year, to talking about sort of this Pride celebration generally. Like, the one last season, I think it felt different because it was the first one. And so we're all like, oh my God, like, how good is something when we've had nothing previously? But this time around, like, we've kind of had something. And so we have something to compare ourselves to and something to benchmark against. And I was a little bit underwhelmed, I gotta say, this time round. As I said at the top, I was at the Sydney FC Western United Pride celebration game, and my club, the Flying Bats, was lucky enough to be invited to do the Guard of Honour for the players when they came out of the tunnel. Which was really lovely. When we were there, there were, you know, rainbow flags in the crowd, and there were rainbow corner flags, and we were given some little flags to wave. The players had rainbow ribbons in their hair, but that was kind of it. And I, like, I love visibility, and I think it's really important, and having a platform like this to be able to talk about these issues, it matters. But I'm kind of like, we need to do a bit more than this now. I don't know, sorry to bring men's football into it, I don't know how many people saw Adelaide United men's player Moussa Touré post on Instagram saying that he disagreed with the whole Pride Round thing, which for Adelaide United, who you'd think would be the club who has led this conversation and led this initiative from the beginning, they would have had these kind of educational programs behind the scenes to bring players into that conversation and to get them to understand why this matters, and you know, being able to educate them and upskill them, I suppose, in terms of their language and their knowledge about how, you know, their faith and queerness aren't necessarily mutually exclusive and all that kind of stuff. But the fact that a player still came out and said that, he apologized later, of course, but the fact that that kind of happened was a bit like, oh, okay, yikes. Like, I thought maybe we were a little bit further along than what this suggests. And the fact that it was kind of so inconsistent across the A-League women in particular was a little bit sad. Like, Canberra United did a nice thing. Perth Glory did a nice thing. We said there was the Pride Cup with Adelaide and Victory. But it was kind of just a little bit like, oh, here's all the rainbows for television, and then we're just going to go back to regular programming next week. So I don't really know, like, how to feel about it, you know? Like, I think that we need to be doing more, and the league needs to be showing us that they're engaging in these initiatives in a more genuine and structural way, rather than just being like, yeah, here's our Pride stuff. Woohoo. Here's some rainbow flags. All right. See you next time, everyone. And that's about it.
The Victory warm-up kit looked like it was probably going to be an actual kit, but it's ended up a warm-up kit that they take off after the warm-up, which is a bit of a shame. And it was, yeah.
And totally defeats the purpose as well, right? Like, it's meant to be about visibility. What kind of visibility is a warm-up Pride kit?
Most people aren't there for the warm-up, right?
Exactly.
The warm-up, because you have the warm-up and then the players actually go back in the rooms and then they come out again with their normal kit. And if it's not 38 degrees, sometimes they have the tracksuit over a regular kit, right? It was a bit of a shame, actually, that the Adelaide United Pride kit, the main one, was white, with that rivalry with Melbourne Victory. I would have loved to have seen them once again try and have the red kit and find a way to make it Pride related rather than just trimmings as well, just because I think that's where you really get people on board. You still have that, you know, it's such a big rivalry, red, blue, but have the Pride to it rather than sort of it felt like washed out with some rainbow highlights. Anyway, that was just my personal style preference. But yeah, it felt inconsistent. Working at games, you'd see sort of some of the digital advertising was Pride related and you see the rainbow corner flags, but I think it all just felt like little subtle hints everywhere rather than a really concerted effort. So I felt like, you know, the league's social media played it up like it had done a lot more than it actually had, and having been at games, you're like, it didn't actually resonate. I can't speak for the main game in Adelaide, of course, because I know what Adelaide United have wanted to do there, and they've really pushed it. But yeah, and clearly you had a good experience at Sydney FC, Sam, but it didn't feel like a full-blown Pride round, right? And I know they called it like a Pride celebration and stuff like that rather than a Pride round per se, but it did feel kind of diluted, I think is maybe the word I want. And yeah, the Moussa Touré thing kind of just emphasised all that for mine. And, you know, as much as the response from Adelaide was like, you know, education, these sorts of things, you know, his language not acceptable, and he apparently came out and, you know, apologised, and I can't imagine how the conversation was between him and Josh Cavallo after that, obviously in the same team. And it also felt like a bit of the attitude coming out was, players, you know, just shouldn't really post on social media. And it's like, it's not just that you shouldn't say this stuff on social media, it's that the work, you know, should be put in and the conversations had that you don't want to post that stuff or think that stuff, you know, right? And he's 18 and the club, you know, they're clearly going to put the work in to work with him. I imagine the PFA will as well. But, you know, I don't know if saying don't post what you think on social media is necessarily anything more than a Band-Aid, right?
What I did find interesting about his original statement, though, is, like, he used the correct abbreviation. the LGBTQ. So there's clearly been maybe some intervention there. Maybe some folks would argue you put IA plus at the end, but like nearly there. And I think that's also like for me, it's like he's an 18-year-old boy. Mistake was made, that kind of thing. But it is about, like you say, kind of what's happening behind the scenes to just, yeah, ensure that this kind of situation doesn't happen. And it is a bit jarring that it was Adelaide, like an Adelaide United player in particular, who kind of caught in the crossfire there. I will say also that with Pride Celebration and Pride Round, when it is something that's like maybe existing more in the digital space, like that's kind of where having these kinds of rounds or celebrations where the harm happens as well for LGBTQIA plus people, because like the chances of, you know, being hate crimed at a Pride game is like it's there, but the chances of seeing some vile comments in response to social media accounts posting about this is like much, much higher. And that's obviously two different things, but it's still like, I think that needs to be taken into consideration. Like if you're not kind of going all out, but you're still making it a thing that's sort of tepid, that harm is still happening. I don't know. It's that, like that to me. And friend of the pod, Dave Manuka, talked about this. Like he was like, I'm really happy that this is happening, but it's just like really draining to see all of this stuff on social media. And that's kind of an unfortunate like reality of having this kind of stuff. But it's also something that I think clubs need to figure out and push through and kind of understand what their stance is and what the purpose of having a Pride celebration is. Because it should kind of be undeniable. That's the point, you know, like unavoidable, and present a stance from clubs that it's like you are safe here. Anyways, that's just my two cents on that. And also, sorry, Harriet, just one last thing. Corner flags, rainbow corner flags are more expensive. So that's a boot to Forza. Very funnily priced at $69, but the other colours are $35 for a set of four. So what's that about, Forza? Because I looked into buying some for my club and I was like, you know what? We are inclusive, but we're also a community football club who have budgets that we need to abide by. So, yeah, sorry. What's going on there? Little boot in there.
Harrow. You're just buying four different coloured ones to put on each corner. We'll do our own rainbow. Yeah, just on the lack of moderation on some of the social media accounts, it felt like when looking on Instagram, like posts of people, you know, dressed up with rainbow makeup and stuff, or Andrew Redmayne's fantastic gloves where he put the flags on. The comments are just besieged by the worst people, just letting you know about woke politics and you're in the minority and gross and like just the worst possible comments. Like I don't need to go into how bad they are, but where's the moderation? Like we hear so much about talking about, you know, player safety, online safety. We're putting in all this work. We're working with these moderation companies. We're doing this in association with this and this and this. And you haven't got someone moderate. If you don't have someone moderating the comments, just turn them off. Like, it's pretty simple. And you don't actually need, if you don't have the resources to actually moderate properly, and you should do, then just turn the comments off. Because you're certainly not helping anyone by leaving them on. And like, it's pretty astonishing. The Redmayne stuff, the post is 23 hours old and there's still some really awful comments up there with, yeah, that clearly haven't been addressed from when I last looked at it. So it's like, it's on the leagues. You can't actually, you know, capitalize on the community for, you know, to look good if you're not actually walking the walk, right? Like, why would people want to engage with your things about how great your Pride celebration is when you're clearly not leaving the room to celebrate? And as Angela said, that's the place where you're most likely to be attacked or see really awful comments. So, yeah, it's a pretty straightforward thing to get right, eh?
Absolutely, yeah. Like it's pretty, it's pretty galling as a member of that community for the A-Leagues to sort of almost like use us as an excuse to celebrate. Like, look how diverse and inclusive and welcoming we are. But at the same time, not actually taking the practical steps in the spaces where we are targeted the most. Like, you can celebrate us, but protect us. But, like, especially on players' Instagrams, players' social media profiles, like, they're the ones who are going to be copying this. And can you imagine some of the queer players who are seeing those responses to that unmoderated stuff? Like, that's the sort of like the next step that I was talking about earlier. I'm like, it's good to be visible and to celebrate and to at least have something, but just having something, as Marissa described it, the bare minimum, that can't be the bare minimum anymore, because there are other layers to this and there are other steps that need to be taken in order to actually make the structural changes that make queer people feel not just safe, but actually accepted in the A-Leagues. And it's good that we're getting there, and it's important that, you know, we have these conversations, but I really hope that from the APL's perspective going forward, that they don't just reach out to Pride Cup and Pride Cup is able to do their part, but they're able to reach out to more queer fans and to more queer players and to talk to them about what they want and how they see their role in this broader celebration or round or whatever, and how we can actually extend that out to fans, because that seems to be sort of the disconnect at the moment, is you know, particularly coming off the back of the Women's World Cup, there is a huge influx of queer fans to these spaces. And yet we don't, or they don't, the APL don't, the clubs don't quite have the tools or the knowledge or the structures in place to be able to make sure that this community is safe. So, yeah, I don't know. Was this kind of a boot? I don't know. Maybe it was just more of a discussion. But, yeah, hopefully going forward, not only will we see a bit more genuine concerted effort from the administrators in this space, but also, like, clubs, come on. You knew that this Pride round was happening. Get some Pride jerseys. Like, you can plan it a year in advance. You know that it's going to happen next year. Let's, like, make it an actual, like, celebration of visibility. Let's put it out there on that platform. Don't just do a little tepid, oh, well, some of our players don't want to be part of it, so we'll just have a warm-up jersey for some of those people kind of move. That's not how this works. That's just conceding defeat.
Yeah. Be better, basically. And if you reckon you stand for something, actually stand for it, eh?
There was definitely boot elements in that chat. Do you want to talk about Canberra really quickly?
I'll do a quick boot, yeah. About Canberra United. So for those who have been paying attention, Michelle Heyman, captain of Canberra United, came out after their game on the weekend and made some comments about how the players have been largely kept in the dark about what their future holds. Canberra are obviously out of the finals race, and so they've only got 3 rounds to go in terms of the A-League women. Their season ends at the end of March, and the players don't know what is happening next. There's obviously the bigger context to this is that Canberra have submitted an A-League men's expansion bid, and it's expected that that is going to be awarded and implemented, and all the wheels are starting to turn ahead of the next season for a men's Canberra team to kick off. But from the sounds of the comments from Michelle Heyman, none of the players have been assured of anything. They haven't received any information either from Capital Football and their board or from the APL about what this looks like, about what their role will be in that, about whether the new owners, whoever they are, it hasn't been announced yet, are going to want Canberra United to be part of that enterprise, or even if they do, whether they're going to maintain things like the name or the logo or the colours or the contracts. Some players are contracted for multiple seasons, yet they don't know if they're actually going to have those upheld going into the next one with these new owners and this new club that's potentially coming over the top of them. So, yeah, Heyman sort of came out in the Canberra Times and spoke on behalf of the players, saying that, you know, they're really getting to the point where they need some clarification from the APL. And that if they don't, there are some players, including herself, who are probably going to walk. And I don't know about y'all, but if I am involved in the administration of Canberra United, I am wanting to lock down Michelle Heyman yesterday. She is your most marketable asset. She is one of the most marketable players in the league. She could potentially play a significant role at the Olympics. And if her contract situation is up in the air and she's already experiencing uncertainty, there are so many clubs, not just in Australia, but also around the world, who are probably going to sweep in and snap her up, because she is absolutely in form and she is killing it at the moment. So it's really frustrating. And we've spoken a number of times in the past about the basket case that has been Canberra United and Capital Football behind the scenes. I've got a story that's going to be coming out about this sometime this week as well. It's something that has needed to be addressed publicly for a very long time. And I think the hope from all parties involved really is that this new investor with the Canberra men's bid is going to be able to effectively take Canberra United away from Capital Football, because the member federation has over the course of years really neglected and kind of run the team into the dirt, which is an absolute travesty, considering that Canberra United is a founding member of this league. They've produced dozens of Matildas. They're the only standalone women's club currently operating at the professional level in Australia. They mean so much to so many people. They're the only professional women's team outside of, I think, the basketball in Canberra as well. You know, there are so many reasons why Canberra United matters to so many people. And so to see it having to drag itself to this level, and to see the players repeatedly expressing frustrations about the way it's been managed from the Capital Football Board, from administrators behind the scenes, the radio silence from the APL, all this kind of stuff is heartbreaking. So hopefully they get some clarification in the next couple of weeks and an investor is confirmed, and that investor believes in Canberra United as much as we all do. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, it's a sad situation with Canberra, and obviously we want them to keep existing, but more than that, we want them to thrive, because a good Canberra is good for the league. So we'll obviously watch this whole situation with plenty of interest as it continues to unfold, and hopefully there is a positive result. But let's move on to some happier things. We'll move on to some how goods. The main one, which we haven't spoken about yet in this episode, is the Young Matildas qualifying for the Under-20s Women's World Cup later this year in Colombia, which is just so good. They haven't directly qualified for an Under-20 World Cup since 2006. Long-time listeners might remember they were at the 2022 edition, but we only got through on default.
Default.
Because North Korea withdrew, so we took their place. We covered that tournament, and hopefully we'll get to cover this one as well. That's a future plan perhaps, but it's so exciting. The really cool thing is Leah Blaney, who was a player in that 2006 squad, is now the coach who has taken them back to the World Cup squad. And it's really, really exciting. It's really impressive. They top their group. They take on Japan on Wednesday. We've got 10 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time kickoff. So, I don't think we can stress how good and cool and important it is for our youth national teams to be qualifying for major tournaments. And hopefully their Asian Cup run isn't finished either. So the Young Tillies, how bloody good. Angela, you had a how good as well.
Yeah, just a very quick one. A how good and a congratulations to Teresa Pelias for having her second bub. I heard of this on Dubzone, so I'm sorry if I'm misremembering bub's name, but I believe it is Rhea. I'm in total awe of anyone who has a baby, so congratulations and how good, and hope everyone is travelling well.
Friend of the pod, Teresa Pelias.
Mm-hmm. Friend of the pod, Teresa Pelias.
One of the OG friends of the pod, Teresa Pelias, and one of the great people in Australian football. So congrats to Tan family. How good.
A massive, massive how good. We absolutely love to see it. But that is us done for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, we are over on espn.com.au and the ESPN app. You can find us on Spotify, Apple, all of the usual pod spots. If you like what we do, leave a review and subscribe. If you want to have a chat to us, we really appreciated all the questions this week about the Tillies strike force conundrum. So hit us up at the Far Post Pod if you have any questions for us in the upcoming weeks. But until next time, see you. Thank you.